Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The states will take our advice or the new framework for the food packages, and then they have to make some choices about which of the available options do they want to take, and then there will be some new mandated changes that they have to integrate it into the food packages.
USDA Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, Stacy Dean.
I was just in Maine, and they were talking about a particular population that they're serving where teff is a really important grain. That was very responsive to a local community there. Or in New Mexico, cornmeal may be a really important food to add because that's just reflective of food traditions in that part of the country. States and tribes meet with WIC participants. They talk to their nutritionists. They talk to community leaders about what are the foods that families who participate in WIC want to see.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Studies show that farmer suicide rates are several times higher than the national average. Jessica Cabrera, managing director of member engagement with the American Farm Bureau Federation, says mental health among farmers and ranchers is an important topic.
There are just so many unpredictable experiences in farming. Experiences such as natural disasters, lots of financial uncertainty, fluctuating markets, labor shortages, trade disruptions. There's so many factors that contribute to extreme stress for farmers and ranchers. And they also often live in a very isolated setting, which can compound the issue. I think it's really important to break the stigma around mental health challenges.
If you or someone you know is struggling, the Farm State of Mind website has many resources to help.
You'll find a national resource directory that is searchable. You'll find helpful tips like how to help someone in emotional pain or how to start a conversation with someone. We have videos, including video and radio public service announcements. We have a peer-to-peer support community resource called Togetherall. That resource offers a space for farm family members ages 16 and older, a way to express themselves anonymously and to receive and give peer support.
Cabrera says anyone can be an advocate for mental health in rural America.
I would say the most impactful way to advocate for mental health wellness among farmers and ranchers is to let everyone know it's okay not to be okay. Just reducing that stigma alone, encouraging those who are struggling to reach out for help and to let them know that that is a completely acceptable way to move forward, empowering people to believe that reaching out for help is a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness.
For more information, go to fb.org/farmstateofmind. Chad Smith, Washington.
U.S. pork exports to Central America were outstanding last year, and that momentum has continued in 2024. U.S. Meat Export Federation Regional Representative Lucia Ruano says consumer education programs funded through USDA and the National Pork Board have helped drive this growth.
In Central America, they used to think that pork needs to be overcooked and maybe it's not as healthy as they would like. But we have been educating and making all of these workshops where they can learn all the nutritional facts, because we bring experts to these type of workshops where they can have all the information firsthand from doctors, nutritionists that give them the correct information of what pork proteins represents. We also teach them how to manage it, how to cook it. So we did this program, Girls Can Grill. It was a very successful program. We trained around 300 women, and it was very nice to see how surprised they were when they tried the pork cooked in the correct way.
This year's consumer workshops have expanded to include additional cooking methods and continue to focus on the pork loin.
Now, we are coming in 2024 with another program that is called Inspire Us. It's like the second edition of Girls Can Grill, but in another methods of cooking U.S. pork cuts. And we focus on loin because loin is a very versatile muscle, let's say. We not only make chops, but we did like ribeyes, you know, thicker cuts that visually it has a better look than if it's just a thin chop. Also, we have been using the tenderloin. So they learned that with the loin, if it's well managed and not overcooked and you have like the correct side dishes, it has a great taste.
I'm John Harris.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So here's the theory behind food system transformation, which is essentially creating a market opportunity, multiple market opportunities that are local and regional that make our system more resilient.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
We learned during the pandemic that this efficient system that benefits large-scale folks was highly efficient but not resilient. And certainly not resilient when you consider that in a record year, you know, a handful of folks benefit and most folks are still struggling. So our theory is let's create a different structure which where small and mid-sized producers have the ability not to accept a commodity price that's dictated by global activity and circumstances where somebody decides to invade a country and everything gets turned upside down, but somewhere where you have more control. Or where you can take advantage of a value-added proposition like organic or climate smart. So that's case, basically what we're doing. And what we've done is it's a combination of grants and loan guarantees that we've put together in various programs. And the key here, the beauty of this is, at least from a climate smart perspective, the Inflation Reduction Act contains an historic amount of resource for NRCS. Now, you aren't going to see a significant increase in 2023 in terms of NRCS capacity. It went up about 12% from the IRA. But next year, it doubles. And the year after that, it doubles again. So just think about that for just a second. That means there's going to be a whole lot of conservation, a whole lot of opportunity to embrace climate-smart agriculture practices. And as that's happening, we're building the market opportunity because there is definitely a desire on the part of consumers. They want to know where their food comes from. They want to know whether it's local. They want to know if it's been sustainably produced. And American agriculture and these small and mid-sized producers are in a good position to be able to respond specifically to that. And as they do it with product of the U.S., in some cases, they can also ensure people that, you know what, you're buying something that was, everything was done right here. So IRA is a critically important component. Farm Bill, critically important component in terms of recognizing the need for this kind of system and basically authorizing and approving continued support for local and regional food systems, continued support for climate smart practices, continued support for organic, continued support for processing, and for the supply chain that supports processing. And I believe that at the end of the day, if we make a concerted effort to make this happen, the following happens. One, farm income for these small and mid-sized folks improves. Two, there are more rural jobs that are created. Three, American agriculture gets to a net zero future faster than anybody else does, and so we have an opportunity to obtain an advantage in an international market. And four, because something really intra-entrepreneurial and sustainable and exciting is happening in rural places, a lot of those young people who felt that they didn't have options now have many options. They can run that processing facility. They can run that food hub. They can run that farm-to-school program. They can run an organic operation, or they can help market a farm family that's now going online and selling across the United States. And with the Reconnect program and the broadband stuff that's going to expand access to meaningful high-speed internet from the infrastructure law, now you have the ability literally to market anywhere in the world. That's the future. To me, that's the alternative to get big or get out. We've got to have an alternative to that. Otherwise, it's a very, you know, it's a pretty depressing picture. And I think American agriculture has a place in that transformation. And I think we're going to get there faster than a lot of other industries.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our rural areas have had to expand in our rural members and take in population.
David Gibson is executive director for the Texas Corn Producers on the importance of knowing who your candidates are in elections.
A lot of them run from there on the High Plains, ran all the way over into the western part of Fort Worth, northern part of Dallas, or Central Texas legislators that represent a large part of our rural area wind up with the seats that stretch into Austin or a lot of the growth out of Dallas, north and south. And it's going to be a real challenge if our rural voters don't get out and look at these candidates and go vote, we're certainly liable to see a lot of change in the folks that win elections and the type of knowledge they have, the interest they have in rural agricultural land, rural water issues, rural health issues. The whole thing from out for all of us that live like you and Floyd Ada and I and Toya and all of our growers scattered wherever they are in the state that don't live in one of those metropolitan areas. So hearing the candidates that we've been listening to, we have some very inexperienced agricultural-based candidates running for a lot of those seats. And then there are some that you spend a little time talking to them, asking them questions. You can find out the ones that have a lot more of our rural interest, you know, is close and near and dear to their heart because they've lived it. They've been ag producers. They've been small business owners and out in their rural communities. And I really encourage folks up in rural America, rural Texas, to be sure and examine those candidates, get to know them, ask questions, and see exactly what they're standing for, and then go vote. That's going to be very important, is to get the vote out in these primary elections coming up in March. So I really encourage all our producers. We're going to be sending things to our members, encouraging them to meet these candidates as they come around to your communities, ask them questions about issues that's important right here at home, and then follow up with going to vote whenever we have that primary. We'll do the primary and turn around and have the general election in November. But a lot of our House members, both state and federal, get elected in the primaries because we'll only have races in one party. So being prepared and just not passing over the primary is going to be very important this year in Texas. And I think we could say that's going to be true for all of our states that have a lot of rural interest that have spread districts to where they've got a high urban influence. Not to say our urban friends aren't good, but they really don't understand the issues with health care in our small communities. They don't understand our water issues. There's multiple things, our broadband issues, the things that we deal with out in rural Texas.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Some years historically that we use kind of flirted around neutral for a while. A lot of them went La Nina. So there are two scenarios. Scenario one is across the top for spring, summer, and fall. Scenario two is across the bottom, spring, summer, fall. Neither one of those includes El Nino.
Matt Makins is a meteorologist with Cattle Facts.
To stay in neutral this summer would actually be beneficial for the country, beneficial for the industry. You would spread water out. Here's where the stars align, if you will, the years align for this year. There's your most probable case, and these graphics are on that handout that you sat on. They're at the very bottom, same graphic. Here's the most likely scenario. This El Nino is pretty much peaked. It's weakening. This spring is neutral. That spreads water from the south into the northern plains. But with a La Nina in place by summer, no, the impact isn't huge just yet, but you see the trend progressing as you go forward in time. Drier areas increase for the central and southern plains. We start to send that moisture back to the north. Pacific Northwest, into Montana, Wyoming and the Rockies, you start to get your water coming back as La Nina comes into this transition. If I'm in the panhandle of Texas or Oklahoma, I'm going to be like, we had some good moisture recently. But then May and June and July, you're talking to your friends, you're like, well, the last rain was 10 days ago. Last rain was 2 weeks ago. You're going to start to see that transition happening. But if you're Northern Plains, you're Midwest, you're going to say, oh, we're starting to get some rains are starting to increase for us. As I mentioned earlier, the corn situation to start off, the soil is dry. It is now. Not much recovery. So we'll probably hear some topics about slow start or concerns with the corn for the year. But we'll start to spread moisture in later on. Where could you see things change? Where could you yell at me in July and say, well, Matt, in February you said this? Where could things change in this? Maybe the La Nina doesn't come in roaring like I think it will. Then we'd have that neutral summer and it'd spread moisture out for a lot more folks. That would be a potential area. Fall, maybe we get so much water in Texas that we can hold off the drought a bit. That's possible. I'm not considering it, but that would be possible. The only other thing, for a lot of folks, is that La Nina summer map in the middle. All the green for the southwest. A southwest monsoon can make or break a lot of folks, from Mexico into the southwestern U.S. History suggests it will be robust. I don't know that that's true. That could be another area where you're going to be like, you could be mad. Matt, you said monsoon would be great, didn't pan out. So those would be my concerns going forward. My final concern is the duration of this La Nina. It probably comes back not just one year, but multiple years. So El Nino's impact is nearly over. We've had favorable moisture, helping spring growth. That'll carry over into our summers for a lot of us. Beware of the spring cold that may hit you, especially the mid to latter part of February in the central and southern plains. It's going to come through with moisture. Corn needs to benefit from timely moisture early, and it will improve as the season goes on. And then the drought will come back. Well, we're not totally done with the drought across the south. So where the drought is in March, it starts to grow from there across the southern states.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Presidents have, you know, they have to talk about a lot of things. And when they talk about things, they can't talk about everything. And that's why they got a cabinet.
You ever wondered what role a Secretary of Ag has in a presidential cabinet? Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
They hire people and they ask people to go out and say, be the spokesperson for the administration in this area. And I happen to be, as Ag Secretary, it's my part of my responsibility to be the rural spokesperson. So the executive order was one indication. Then in cabinet meetings, the president always asks about what are we doing in rural areas. I mean, and that's not always, that doesn't always happen, okay? So he's a guy that's genuinely concerned about this. He basically directed me to figure this out. You know, I went on the campaign. When he called me to ask me to take this job, he said, I've got some bad news for you. And I thought, well, okay, you know, I've already been in a cabinet. I don't need to, you know, have another job. He says, I want you to go back to ag. And he said, the reason I do is because you talked about this vision. Well, you've convinced me that it's the right vision. Now you got to go make it happen. That was the bad news. But the resources that we have has allowed us to jumpstart this and to begin to have people understand the possibility. And what I want this audience and every audience I've been speaking to understand is it's not just isolated organic over here and local and regional food over here and processing over here. It's part of a concerted effort to create another model. One that doesn't necessarily require us to not produce. We want to produce. The world needs us to produce. But one that creates more revenue opportunities within that same small and mid-sized farming operation so that those who choose to remain small or mid-sized or for whatever reason that's where they are, that they're not faced with the dilemma and the pressure of having to say to the next generation, we just can't continue. So one thing I know about everyone in this room who's a farmer is at the end of the day, that's really what they want, is the ability to say to that next generation, which is true of everybody in America. You always want the next generation to have it better than you had it. And I think American farmers will like the ability to be able to say to the next generation, if son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, if you want to farm, there's opportunity here. And so that's what this is. And it's a system. It's not just an isolated set of programs. It's a holistic approach to try to create as many new profit centers as possible, and then try to create mechanisms through cooperators, through rural business, through the business centers, through mechanisms to make it easy for people to interact with that system, to be able to figure out, well, I can take advantage of that ecosystem market, or I can take advantage of that climate-smart agriculture commodity, or I can take advantage of that farm-to-school program. People have to be able to see how they personally can take advantage of it, and that's the goal.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Brands and retailers not only want things, quote, sustainable, whatever the specific definition may be, but they also want it verifiable.
Barry Worsham is president and CEO of Cotton Incorporated.
That's one change that has certainly happened over the last several years and will continue to increase in terms of its growth. The second that's more recent has been traceability, that brands and retailers want to know, have to know in some cases, where the product is coming from. And it's a challenge for cotton because, you know, most food crops are not blended. But if you want to know where your shirt, what the ingredients of your shirt, most cottons around the world are blended. So it could be U.S. cotton, it could be some Indian cotton in there, it could be some, you know, Brazilian cotton or even Chinese cotton. And the difficult thing for in the U.S. right now is the government is, with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, is really cracking down on any kind of products coming into the U.S. in cotton that has any connection with the Western China or the Uyghur population. So that has made it imperative for brands and retailers to really know where the cotton is coming from. So you combine sustainability with traceability, and now they want to know what happens at the end of the life, which is, you know, does it, we don't want to throw stuff in the landfill. They want to know about biodegradation and does it create problems for water, and all of those things are important, and they're going to continue to be. So it's, on the one hand, it's kind of a challenge for the cotton industry to get all this lined up, but more importantly, I think if we have an advantage finally over some synthetics. We can't compete with synthetics on price, but we can compete on sustainability and even circularity, because cotton is a natural fiber and it does biodegrade, and it, you know, creates its own seed, and there is a circularity to that. So that's what's coming, and I don't see any of those things going away anytime soon. And so that's both a challenge and an opportunity for growers.
But how often do we talk about the degradability of a product being a positive?
I think it's not only continue to, but it will increase in importance, that topic. It's already gaining legs. And basically what it is that cotton is a biodegradable fiber. And if cotton has breaks apart and in the wash, and some of those fibers or microfibers make its way into the streams, rivers and ocean, it's not a big deal because cotton biodegrades fairly rapidly. Synthetics do not biodegrade virtually at all. So textiles represents a chunk of, I can't tell you exactly what percent, but a major component of microplastics in the ocean. And there's an estimate out there that has not been refuted that based on the amount of the water we drink and the food we eat, an average person consumes about 50 credit cards worth of plastic a year. So that's one credit card a week of plastic that we're consuming. Fish are consuming the plastic, we're consuming the fish that's in the water. And this is a growing problem. It's not just textiles, but all plastics that make its way and sort of come apart in the waters. So that is a big deal, and it's a competitive advantage if we can get our U.S. sustainability program up and going, if we have the traceability technology to help that, if we help brands and retailers know where the product is coming from, it could be a benefit for U.S. cotton and cotton in general.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Every decade, the Agriculture Department, its Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services mission area, and stakeholders of the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, WIC, review and update nutrition guidelines and its WIC food package offerings based on science. Deputy Undersecretary Stacy Dean says for the most recent review, such updates include...
We've expanded the availability of fruits and vegetables. Clients will have more resources to either buy in the grocery store or at their farmers markets directly from producers. The dairy package are offering more choice, so the kinds of package sizes that families can get. And then in our whole grain category, we're offering a whole lot of new choices to reflect preferences of our WIC community.
Such as TEF for some populations in Maine or blue cornmeal in the Southwest. The latest WIC updates also coincide with the 50th anniversary of the program. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.